before you know it, the scariest thing in your life that could possibly happen will happen. You'll close a deal, you'll sign about 50 pages, and somebody's going to slide some keys across the table and say, here's your property, good luck. And you're going to say, oh, what do I do now? What do you mean? I have to take care of this property? How do I do that? And that's when the journey begins and the real fun begins.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, welcome back to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Cavagione, and today's guest is Brian Grimes with 24/7 Cashflow University. Brian, super excited to talk with you today, and especially with what we're going to talk about regarding real estate. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, just to knock things off straight off the bat, I want to ask you the first question I ask everybody that comes on the show, and we want to know more about you. So if you could share a little bit about yourself, tell us your story. Who is Brian Grimes?
Well, Brian Grimes is, I was a former basketball player in a former life. Grew up in the Philadelphia area in that Allen Iverson era. Fell in love with basketball early on. Grew to be about 6'5 by 13, 14. So was nationally recruited, nationally ranked. My first high school game was against LeBron James. They flew us out to Akron, Ohio to play at Akron University, sold out crowd. And that was just a super nutty. But I'm very similar. I've had some crazy experiences, but I'm very similar to a lot of the average Joes out there. I did everything right, or what I thought was right. I went to school. I graduated from Columbia University, dotted my I's, crossed my T's, and woke up one day in a cubicle wondering, how did I get here? I thought I did everything right. How did I get here? How long am I going to be stuck here? And what do I need to do to get out? Because I always had this voice in my head that would tell me I'm supposed to be doing more. I was just meant for more than just working a 9-to-5. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to be my own boss, control my own destiny, my own lifestyle. And when I landed there, I just tried to figure out, what is my way out? And real estate was one of those things that I found in an aha moment, just looking for money at the 9-to-5 and figuring out you're not going to make $1 million for the average person working a 9-to-5. So the question becomes, where's the money? If it ain't here, it's out there. It's out in the street. And I was driving home doing a commute one day, and I just was looking out the car window and seeing properties, really. And I pulled over frantically, pulled up my cell phone calculator and just start punching numbers. And on one block, there were 40 properties. And I just figured $500 a month cash flow per property. There's $250,000 of cash flow on this one block. And I'm in Philly at the time. And it's just like, how many blocks are there in Philly? I got to get some cash flow. This is going to be my way out. If I can just get a couple of properties, I can break free from this thing. So that was my aha moment. And just looking at real estate as the way out. And I took that leap of faith eventually through trial and error and just got into the game and learned from the School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah, I love that, Brian. It's funny because one of the things that I try to, like when I bring people on the show too, is to pull that aha moment out somewhere in this interview, right? Like, when was it that you hit? And boom, right off the bat, you're telling me in your intro. So that's awesome. You did things the right way, right? The typical American dream, right? You graduated from college, you got your 9-to-5, and you were like, man, it didn't take you long to realize this is not the way to go.
Absolutely. Oh,
and I want to rewind back a little bit too, because you didn't tell me, man, like I knew you played basketball, but you didn't tell me you played in high school against LeBron James.
Yeah.
You know, is the hype that real?
The hype was super real. And I played some monsters. Greg Oden, for people who, you know, of our era, we know these names. Michael Beasley. Some of these guys are like beasts. And I played against these guys at Nike Invitational Camps and all of that type of stuff. But nobody was, how I would describe LeBron at this time. He's 6'8". He's 230, 235. The way he can jump now at 37, 38 years old, this guy could get his whole chest above the rim in high school. He could absolutely fly. And he was so fast. If you were standing next to him and you guys were both in a full out sprint and you reached over to touch him, he was two paces ahead of you. Like, he was that fast. So he was just on a level of his own in high school. You really couldn't match him. He could jump out of the gym. He could do everything. He was like just a basketball savant and has been ever since. So it was a incredible experience for me, going from playing at a little back gym in Philly in front of 150 people to going and playing in front of 15,000 people in a 12,000 capacity gym was just like man, welcome to high school. This is going to be a crazy journey.
Yeah. Geez. I wanted to ask that because I have a friend of mine, and I know he listens to the show, that when he hears this, he's going to lose it because he's a big LeBron fan. And him and I always debate. We do the LeBron and Jordan thing back and forth all the time. So I'm a big Jordan guy. He's a big LeBron guy. So we go back and forth a lot on that. Kyle, this is for you. It's a treat for you. I hope you like that, man.
Yeah. We're the LeBronite. So.
Awesome, definitely. Man. No, that's good stuff. Yeah. So back on topic, right? So you realized that this whole rat race thing was not for you and you're like, I need to do something different. And you were looking at real estate. And I like how you said that as you were going down the blocks in Philly, you were like, man, like each one of these properties could be $500 a month in cash flow. And just, it reminds me of that meme with the woman that's sitting there and you got all the mathematical calculations and equations coming up. And so that's happening in your head right there in that moment. You're like, okay, this is something I can do. Now, when you have this aha moment and you realize that this is something you can do, what was the next step you took to actually take that action on that aha moment?
You just go all in. Like when you have that aha moment and you know that this is what I'm supposed to do, like this is the opportunity, this is the way out, everything else just fades in terms of importance. So at the lunch break, sometimes before work, after work, I'm not even eating lunch. Like I'm going out and I'm looking at properties. I'm doing everything that I can to take the logical next step to get to my goal. And that's something that we need to know when we're just getting started is you're not going to know how to end up with the property at the end of the day. And you don't need to know yet. All you need to know is the next logical step. So the next logical step would be get with a mortgage broker and get a pre-qualification so that you can put out an offer. Then the next step after that is go find a realtor who can show you some properties. Then start looking. Go out and put your hands on these deals. Put your boots on the ground and go touch the real estate. It's real for that reason. It's not a stock. It's not a bond. It's not paper. You can go feel it, touch it, and learn it at a very intimate level. So just taking those basic steps and putting myself in striking distance to even put out an offer, it was just doing the next step and the next step. And after a point in time, you see enough properties, you're going to put out enough offers, and eventually somebody's going to say yes, and you're going to be under contract in a deal. And then you'll go through that title work and that closing process. And before you know it, the scariest thing in your life that could possibly happen will happen. You'll close a deal, you'll sign about 50 pages, and somebody's going to slide some keys across the table and say, here's your property. Good luck. And you're going to say, what do I do now? What do you mean? I have to take care of this property. How do I do that? And that's when the journey begins and the real fun begins.
Yeah. No, I like how you described it too. It's very much like on the job training, right? And I like also how you said too, you got yourself within striking distance, because once you get yourself to that point where you're within striking distance, now you actually can attack, right? Now you can actually go out there and make it happen. So taking these little steps as you continue to go and just follow the process and get closer and closer to that goal of getting to the closing table, right? And then the way you describe it too is that once you're at the closing table, like that's when the journey begins. You get handed those keys and now it's okay. Now it's time to work the actual magic. All right. So let's talk about that for a second. So you took your aha moment. You started doing your everything else step by step methodically, right? As you were going along and figuring out your way of how you want to do this. Now, you in particular, I know you love the Burr method, right? So is that what you started with right away? Did you find that first property and say, okay, I'm going to like rehab this thing. I'm going to fix it up really nice, refinance it, and then I'm going to cash out and go get another one. How'd that work for you?
Absolutely not. So when I started off, I did a house hack, right? So I had my FHA. My goal was to go out and get the best multifamily that I could afford, the biggest deal that I could afford. So I negotiated a seller's assist, like a 3% seller's assist. I ended up putting down all in maybe $5,000 to $7,000 into a duplex that had a unit in the basement that wasn't like a legal unit, but I was going to live in it. And I rent out the top two units and I could live for free and make a little bit of cash flow. So I just went turnkey. And that is a good way to go when you're first getting started, because you don't know, you don't even know what you don't know. So going into a full gut renovation can be just completely daunting when you haven't even been a landlord for a couple of years and learned that game, the monetization game. So I started off just completely turnkey. And I did that kind of turnkey process where you find a bank-owned property, you put down the 10 and 20%. I did that game until I ran into that roadblock that we all run into, which is if I keep doing this and putting down 20, 30% on every deal, it's going to take me 10 lifetimes to build up a portfolio that is going to allow me to break out of the 9-to-5. So once I ran into that roadblock, I had my second aha moment, which is I'm never going to get there with this strategy. My strategy's flawed. I have to change it. And that change was the Burr strategy.
All right, fantastic. So you actually started off with a house hack. And so it was a duplex that you turned into a triplex by living in the basement and still renting out the two units. So were you actually cash flowing right away since you were renting out both units?
Yeah, I was getting paid. The mortgage is about $800 a month. Each unit would rent for $700 a month. And I'm living in the basement. So you're getting paid to live.
Come on, so this is, man. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah. And for a young guy who's working 100% commission, I'm a financial planner. I'm selling insurance and annuities at this time. Being able to just live for free. This makes you better than, I don't want to say better, but puts you in a better position than 90% of Americans. It puts you in a position where you're not spending money on rent or really a mortgage. You're living for free or you're getting paid to live. And when you get paid to live, everything changes for you. You can save every penny you earn and put it into more deals that produce more cash flow and continue to break yourself out of the 9-to-5 and build wealth, true long-term wealth.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're now at a point where you're stress-free, right? You're living a stress-free life. You don't have to worry about, oh, can I make my mortgage payment? Yeah, you can make your mortgage payment because your tenants are making it for you. Yeah. And you're still pocketing some cash out of that. So you got money for some groceries and some utilities or whatever you need. So yeah, that's what a great first property to get into. And then you said you had your second aha moment where you realized, okay, if I want to scale, if I want to keep doing this, I can't just keep dropping 20, 25% down on these investment properties. So that's when you started looking at Burr, right? Because you were like, hey, yeah. I could buy this property, fix it up. I'll buy an ugly looking house in a pretty nice neighborhood or a decent neighborhood, right? And get it up to par with the rest of the home. So the value catches up or exceeds it, right? Cash out refinance. Now you got your money back to go rinse and repeat and do it again. Exactly. Tell me what that first Burr deal was like for you.
It was not as rosy as we just mapped it out, but the learning was, it never is. And that is the golden key. But it definitely was extremely educational. So I got inspired, right? I go on, I'm digging on YouTube, and YouTube is not as built out, you know, as it is now. So I find some guy and he's flipping Philly. Like he's going in and he's doing heavy, deep rehabs. He's buying properties from the sheriff's sale for $2,000-$3,000. And he's going in and just full gutting these things. So he's got these videos up where he opens the door for the first time. And it's like the roof's caved, the roof's in like the basement, and it's just a puddle of water. And he's blowing the bricks off. He's cutting the roof off. He's doing everything and full gut renovating. And it inspired me. I started doing that. I bought three shells on one block right by LaSalle University, one of the big five universities in Philly. And one was a burnout, one was a tear down, and one was just a shell. Raised some money, partnered up with somebody to do this, hired some contractors who gave the best, the cheapest bid out there. And when you get the cheapest contractor, you get what you paid for. They ended up burning us, running off with $40,000. And then that was when that third, we'll call it the third light bulb went off, which is if I'm going to survive this Burr strategy game, I have to take ultimate control. I have to cut out middlemen. I have to learn the rehab game. I have to know what every screw, nail, cost, and everything that goes into these properties, the timelines. I have to basically become the GC if I want to win in this game. And it was good that experience happened early on and on a smaller scale, because that's exactly what happened. I ended up becoming the GC for my projects, managing everything directly, buying materials and managing labor and paying that directly. And that was the major key to scaling up successfully and being able to produce massive profits with the Burr strategy.
Yeah, that's a great point. And a lot of people, like when I talk to them, especially on their first deal that they're actually doing contract work on, a lot of times people get burned because they feel like I'm going to go with the cheapest contract because I want to try to save as much money as possible to get as much profit as possible. And a lot of times, like you said, you get what you pay for, right?
Yeah.
And that's very unfortunate, man, that they ran off with 40 grand. That's one of those horror stories that you hear all the time, and it's real. So yeah. For those of you that are listening, pay attention here. Don't just go with the cheapest guy. Go with someone that you know has a good track record and that you can trust. But yeah, so Brian, I need to educate myself on the actual construction side here. I need to learn how much this stuff really costs, what type of materials are really going to be needed, basically turning yourself into the GC. I even see you got that hard hat in the background back there. Is that to remind you like, hey, man, remember that, you know, this is the stuff you need to know. But so you had to go and learn all that stuff just to make sure that in the future, you're not going to get burned again. So I think that's huge that you took that time to say, hey, let's have a tactical pause real quick. I need to learn something. I need to make sure I know what's going on here so this doesn't happen again. Kudos to you for recognizing that right away off that first deal. Because sometimes it takes people a couple times where it's, man, what the hell am I doing wrong? And how do I keep getting screwed out of these deals and losing this money?
Yeah.
So you learned the first time right away. So that's good, man. All right. So after you learned that hard lesson, that expensive education, that's what we call it in real estate when something like this happens, right? It's an expensive education. So once you got educated, what did the next deal look like?
So the next deal, it was similar, right? There wasn't really a problem with the deal. It was the approach to the deal. So the next deals were all similar. Buying as low as we can. So where I like to operate is in what I call the developer spread. So a developer spread means, can I buy properties for $30,000, $40,000 in shell condition that'll have an after repair value of $230,000 or $240,000? So I have a $200,000 spread that I'm operating within. I know, because I essentially became the GC, that I can control the labor and materials and rehab these properties full gut renovation style for about 100K, maybe 110,000. So if I buy it for 30, put 110 in, I'm in at 140 and it's worth 240. I now have the perfect conditions for a cash out refinance where I can go to a credit union, a community bank, a local bank, maybe even Bank of America if I'm getting started earlier, or a portfolio lender, and get like an 80% or 75% cash out refi, slap a 30-year note on it, put the tenants in, maybe I Section 8, maybe I room rent, maybe I do market rent, depending on where I'm at. There's co-living, there are all these different strategies out there for monetizing. And then I wash, rinse, repeat, I get my money back. I might even get paid like 20, 30 grand in the cash out refinance, which is tax-free money, by the way. And I put that into future deals and I continue to scale. And I use construction lenders on the front end, hard money lenders and different construction lenders on the front end to increase my capacity and my scale. Now I have $3 to $5 million of purchasing power and rehab budget that I can now scale up with. I can get a warehouse. I can get a dump truck. I can start to cut all of my costs down to the bare minimum, because when you get heavy into this burst strategy, there's making money and saving money, and both end up as green dollar bills in your pocket. A lot of us will overlook the saving money because it's imaginary. Like, we don't see it. So we just think, you don't need to focus on that. Warehouse, for instance, $3,000 a month for a 10,000 square foot warehouse could save me about $200,000 a month operating at full scale. So these things are very powerful, buying in bulk and getting these dump trucks and these different things that increase your speed and your efficiency.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. You'd mentioned, though, that there's several strategies, right? Once you renovate the property and how to rent it out. And I want to get to that, but I also want to point out something else that you said, too, where you mentioned that when you refinance the property and you get that cash back, that's tax-free money. So turn around, if you were flipping that property, right? And had this $100,000 spread and you sell it for $100,000 profit, you're not getting $100,000 in profit. You're paying some nasty capital gains on that too, right? Doing it this way, now, not only did you get a nice chunk of that change back, that cash back to you tax-free, but at the same time, you now have a cash flowing asset that you put tenants in and that you get to keep and watch it appreciate and go up in value over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
That's huge. I want to go back to what you were talking about with saving money, right? So a lot of people ignore this portion, right? They say, oh yeah, if it's not making me money, then whatever. The cost savings, like you said, is going to put some of those green dollar bills in your pocket too, right? And it sounds like you've learned that early on.
Yeah.
And actually, there's a lot of things you learned early on too, including the multiple strategies on how to put tenants in a property. So actually, I want to touch on that too. But first, let's talk about the savings piece. So what are some things that you realize that you can do, like little changes that you can make on the properties and things like that, that are cost-effective savings for you that actually puts more money in your pocket in the future?
We'll get back to the show after a brief break.
What's going on, Average Joes? We know that managing one account or your entire family's portfolio can be stressful and time-consuming. From building and maintaining spreadsheets, calculating how many new shares and units you need to purchase with your contributions, finding the time to log into your brokerage and make those trades, and annually rebalancing each account. Well, my friends over at Passive came up with a tool that can help you manage all of this in a fraction of time without spreadsheets and manual calculations. Passive is a portfolio management tool that makes it easier for DIY investors to maintain a balanced portfolio and build a passive investment strategy at their online broker. It eliminates the need to use spreadsheets, saves you from having to log into your broker to place trades, and helps you stick to your portfolio's target allocation.
Elite users can save even more time by using the one-click trades feature and having Passive execute the required trades on your behalf. All of this can be done from the Passive dashboard for all of your accounts. No more logging in to multiple brokerage accounts. Passive is not a robo-advisor. It won't tell you what you should invest in, so you'll need to decide that for yourself, either through self-education or alongside a financial advisor. To learn more about Passive or to sign up, check out our link below, www.averagejoefinances.com/passive. That's P-A-S-S-I-V with no E. Again, P-A-S-S-I-V with no E. Check them out. What's going on, everybody? So I know there's a lot of busy individuals out there like myself. I find myself sometimes struggling with time management when I'm dealing with things with my blog, my podcast, managing my social media accounts. Sometimes it can be really taxing and time consuming. So one of the things I started doing recently that has been super helpful is outsourcing some of this work to subcontractors and freelancers. And I'm doing that through a website called Fiverr. I have a link in the podcast description below that will take you to Fiverr and give you a discount up to $100 off your first order with them. Check it out. It's been a lifesaver for me. It's been saving me a lot of time and a lot of stress, and I really think it could do the same for you. Check out the link below or go to www.averagejoefinances.com/Fiverr, F-I-V-E-R-R. Let's get back to today's episode.
Yeah, little changes in terms of rehab. I mean, you can create streamline processes. So like a modern property will have hardwood flooring. So you might run the hardwood floor from the living room through the kitchen, even into the bathroom, put a nice trim around it. And that allows your speed to increase. So money, they say speed is money in real estate. The saying is, if you lose a day, you lose an hour, couple hours, you lose a day. You lose a couple days, you lose a week. You lose a week, you lose a month. In real estate and rehab. So it's all about speed, and speed is the money. And as you start pushing your crew, you're going to maximize their speed by sending like property inspectors at them and different things at them to keep everybody on their toes and control the environment. Just like a sports coach is going to try to control the team environment. We like to run, we like to push the ball. So you're running sprints in practice, right? You're not just walking the ball up the court in practice. You're controlling that environment. So you try to speed up your contractors first, and that's iteration one. And then you speed them up and you realize they can't go any faster by themselves. So you have to get efficiencies, dump trucks, inspectors, warehouses. Why is the warehouse important? Not only can you buy in bulk, and that's a savings, you're getting like 30 to 40% discounts by buying in bulk, but by having your own little Home Depot where guys aren't spending 2 hours in a line at the pro desk at Home Depot to order things and then take them to the job. When you can get those things out to your job sites in 15 minutes and beat traffic in the morning, and there's always materials there so guys can always work at their maximum speed, you now increase your efficiency, your production, and how quick you can turn tables. So you have to think like a chef with this game. If you're a chef and I'm a chef and we both have a restaurant, we're across the street from each other and we both have a line out the corner and we're trying to compete who can make the most money. If I can fix food and flip those tables, somebody comes in, they order, I get the food to them in 10 minutes, they eat, they're out the door in an hour. And it takes you 2 hours. I can flip more tables in a night than you. So I can run 8 dinner services and you can run 4. I'm making more money than you. Period. So the speed and that efficiency allows you to do more deals in the same amount of time, just make more money. And it just cuts down your labor costs when you're paying guys by the day. So there's just so much savings. As I dove into this, every efficiency I created was focused on speeding up my guys and then speeding up my systems and then saving in terms of bulk, buying at bulk and just creating these different relationships. Even at bulk, you can negotiate a lender down on their pricing. So I'll even take it there. Here's a quick tip. There are no fixed prices in real estate. Everything's negotiable, even with the lender. You can sit down with the lender, say, I don't like that origination fee. You might not like it, but you're moving a $150,000 single family house and I'm moving 10 of them. I'm moving 1.5 million. So they got to talk to me and they got to waive that fee. So as you do everything in bulk, the red carpet continues to roll out to you and you can do more damage. So I learned that early on and then focused on scale and efficiency.
The whole scale and efficiency portion of that is what gets you to that point, right? You were able to grow your business to this point where it's become its own self-sufficient beast, right?
Yeah.
Now you have your own warehouse. So you have time and cost savings because you're buying in bulk. Your contractors have one spot where they go to get everything. They don't have to take all these different trips to different warehouses and different places where, oh, hey, they didn't have the part I needed. So now I got to go to this one over here. No, you got everything right there in house. And I think it's pretty safe to assume, and I'm going to assume here, but when you do your renovations, that you're doing pretty much the same thing in every single property so that you will always have that material because you're always buying that stuff in bulk. So there is no worry about, we didn't have this exact countertop or we didn't have this exact cabinet structure, but you have all that stuff set up. That's pretty awesome, man. That these efficiencies that you build. Okay, so that's one way to save a lot of money and a lot of time. And like you said before too, like actually saving the time is probably one of the biggest cost savings that you're going to get because you lose a couple of days, you lose a week, then you lose a month. And that's you're right. That's how it works, man.
That's how it works.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on to tenant placement, right?
Yeah.
You had mentioned that there are a couple different ways to place a tenant in the properties. You had mentioned the regular, just having a month-to-month tenant. You had mentioned Section 8. You had mentioned rented out by the room or a cohabitation. Right. Yeah. And I've seen a lot of that actually. There was a conference I went to earlier this year and there was a whole breakout session on that, on cohab rentals, which was
the trend.
Mind-boggling when you looked at it because of the amount of cash flow one property can make.
Oh, yeah.
You only need a couple and you're good.
You're done. So, yeah, you're done.
Yeah. So can you tell us about that a little bit? What are some of the different strategies that you've looked at when you place tenants? And are there specific areas where you do things differently?
Yeah. So talk about kind of iterations. Like this whole real estate game is a game of growth and iterating, getting better and improving on your product. So first, when I started doing the BRRRR strategy, it was, let's just play it safe. We're going to do like Section 8. So you buy a 3-bed, 1-bath, you spit shine it, you go find a 3-bed voucher holder, you put them in it, done. You get your cash flow. Then you start getting a little bit smarter. We start doing what we'd call like a kitchen flip. So your traditional row home, and I do this a lot in row home cities, it's you open the front door, you're in a living room, then you have the dining room, and then a kitchen in the back. So we'll start doing kitchen flips. We'll flip the kitchen from the back of the house into the dining room in the middle. And then in the back, we'll put another bedroom on the first floor. So now I turn a 3-bed, 1-bath into a 4-bed, 1-bath. Sometimes I'll turn it into a 4-bed, 2-bath. And that increased my cash flow. So now I can rent that out to a 4-bed voucher holder and increase my cash flow. And then you will continue to iterate there. Then you can get away from Section 8. Section 8 has some, it's great, but it can have some headaches in terms of inspections and how slow it is. So as you're trying to scale a operation, the Section 8 might actually move too slow on the tenanting side. So you'll start to look at co-living. Now, co-living, what do I do there? Well, I iterate even further. Instead of just a kitchen flip, why don't I just blow up the whole house? Why don't I take this 3-bed, 1-bath, which I could room rent. I could rent those rooms for maybe $565, but who wants to live in a room rental anyway? And who wants that headache, right? What kind of tenants can I get to cohabitate in that manner? There are some areas where you do it. If you do it in the center city or the super A-class neighborhoods, you can get some really good tenants that'll do that and younger tenants. But what if I just want to do it for a working class person, somebody who I'm creating like an affordable housing unit for? You get crafty and you take a 3-bed, 1-bath, you full gut it and you rebuild it into 3 beds, 3 baths. Each bedroom has its own bathroom that's only accessible through the bedroom. So it's like a master suite with a washer, a stack washer dryer in the bathroom, stand up shower, glass enclosure, nice 24-inch vanity, nice mirrors. Has everything. It actually is starting to feel like a studio. And I take that kitchen, I flip it all the way to the front of the property. So now they have this eat-in, kitchen, shared space, common area, and their own little studio that'll rent out for about $725, $750 a month. In terms of cash flow, the typical 3-bed, 1-bath will rent for about $1,250 a month. Co-living property, 3-bed, 3-bath, each unit renting for about $750 a month, that's $2,250 a month. So I increased my cash flow off of that property by $1,000 a month. And I can do that within the single family ordinance in a city like Philly. In Baltimore, I could do that with 4 people non-related by blood. In Atlanta and parts of Florida, I can do it with 6 people. So depending on where you're at, it'll let you know how many people can co-live in a certain property. And that's just research based. But it's extremely profitable. And it is a build it, you will come. So I built about 150 of these properties. But the fun fact is what happened during COVID, March 2020, pandemic hits us. Everybody is thinking like this thing's airborne. If you go out of your house, you're just going to get COVID and you're just going to drop. I tenanted 100 of these co-living units in 90 days from March to June. of 2020 in the heat of the pandemic, right? The demand for this product is insatiable as well, because millions of Americans are living on their parents' couch, in their basement, in the bedroom that they grew up in. So creating this product creates an affordable housing product that doesn't need vouchers, doesn't need low-income housing tax credits, doesn't need anything, doesn't have Section 8 inspectors breathing down your neck. And it creates affordable quality granite countertops, stainless steel appliance, mini split system, a type of living for good quality people. So it's been a win-win. It's been extremely profitable.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And thank you for being like so descriptive with everything, because, you know, for the listeners here, they can get a much better idea of how this works, right? Now, I got to take a whole, I guess, like small course on this when I was at this conference, and it was amazing because that's actually one of the places that they were investing was like down in Atlanta and in Florida and stuff, where they were doing like 5-6 bedroom homes and adding the bathrooms and everything. It was just insane. With how they were doing it. And it's just another great strategy that people can put in their tool belt, because as you're looking, like as you're going through and getting deals, especially with now how things are starting to slim down with the higher interest rates, the low inventory, it's making it a little bit harder to find a deal, but they're out there. The deals are out there. You have to find them. But what this does is it gives you an opportunity to say something that might not have worked where you were going to rent it out room by room, or it might not have worked with a month-to-month tenant, might work as a cohabitation space, right? As a co-living Definitely. Space. And by doing it that way, you might be able to afford that higher interest rate and still cash flow. Because in a market like we're in right now, especially since technically we're in a recession, but technically we're not because they're not officially announcing it. But anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But with the current market we're in right now, cash flow is king. And that should be the focus for everybody. Don't buy an asset that's not going to cash flow. Right now is not the time to buy for appreciation. It is not the time to buy for appreciation. So what you're doing and your strategy from the beginning has been like A+ to make it happen. So Brian, that's awesome, man. I've already got like a whole good page of notes, man, just in this short conversation. It's just been really good. Now I want to talk about something. We touched on this a little bit. When you're investing in these neighborhoods, you're bringing value not only to that property and to the people and providing affordable housing, but you're also enriching these neighborhoods, right? You're giving them better properties. How do you create like an exciting real estate investment opportunity that enriches like Class C neighborhoods? Because a lot of people say, I want to try to invest in maybe B minus B. I try not to invest too much in C class. But what do you do that kind of provides these better opportunities in C class neighborhoods?
One, I love that you said that, because what you're talking about there, I look at everything, like I'm an econ major from Columbia University. So I look at a lot of things in terms of supply and demand. So when I hear people saying, I'm looking for B minus, maybe C plus, I dive head first into the C class because there's less competition, less people know how to navigate it. And that usually means wider profit spreads for the people who do. So less competition. The key to C-class, and I had to think about this a lot because one, I grew up in a C-class neighborhood. I know how to navigate it and it just comes naturally to me. But what's the key to C-class investing? The key is volume. The key is volume, meaning I can go on one block and I can buy three properties in a C-class neighborhood. It's not really easy to do that in a B neighborhood. Definitely pretty hard to do it in that class neighborhood because they don't have the volume block by block. But I can go on a really reasonable block. One thing you need to know is every neighborhood, no matter if it's good or bad, has good pockets and bad pockets, whether it's A class, B class, or C class. So even in a C class, there's some great blocks. I can go on a good block in a C class neighborhood, buy two or three properties that are so close you could throw a football to from one to the other if you're standing at one and catch it at the other. And now I can create atmosphere. So when I'm showing a tenant the property, oh, you see those two over there? Those are full gut renovated. They don't even need to know that I did. But now they're seeing the development. They're seeing the activity all around them. The existing residents who live there, it's restoring community pride because they're seeing guys hanging out of houses on ladders with hammers in their hand banging. And that is essentially going to just restore that community pride. And they're seeing money is being poured into these neighborhoods again. It's putting what I call the eyeball effect. So when you move, if you move a single mother into a property in a C-class neighborhood with four kids, that's 10 sets of eyeballs. That's more people to call the cops. It's more people to complain. It's more people putting that property on payroll, utilities, taxes, more people going to the corner store, spending money and money bouncing in the community. It's just uplifting this community brick by brick, person by person. And it starts to run out blight and run out crime. Literally, I've had blocks where I bought 10, 15 properties on one block and it can completely transform it. You have all of these things working for you, but that volume, that ability to control control blocks. And I have areas of Philadelphia where I've purchased, where you couldn't go two blocks without seeing one of my house. I've purchased 150 properties within a zip code. That type of control that you can now have over that zip code in terms of how it looks, how it feels, what kind of services are there. I flirted with services like getting, like hiring like just a private, like they'd have like public safety. I could just hire a private security company, just drive around, check on my people, just like our own public safety. We'll pick you up from the train, take you to your house. Like you can do a lot of different things to just uplift a neighborhood and a community. So having that access and having access to cheap properties that you can buy in bulk to create value, create comps, maybe flip one, keep five, creating that value there, you can just make so much money. And you can do this on the cusp of gentrification where big comps are. Do it a mile out, and pull those comps to you. These are also the properties that double and triple in value because we can buy them lower. So you can just make a lot more money in the C-class and have a lot of control. Yeah. The pros outweigh the cons.
Yeah, I love that, Brian, because even like you said, too, like you're doing some of these half mile away from some of the other neighborhoods that are B and A class properties, right, where the home values are higher. And that's helping that area raise up in value. But what's that going to do the next block over, right? Now that you raised the value over here, it's going to raise the value there, right? And when you have that much control and you're buying that much in bulk, you can completely change the entire neighborhood. You could change the home values of that neighborhood because you're building it all up, right? And you're helping restore that area. That's huge. Yeah. That goes back to what you were doing originally with the, hey, like buy in bulk and you can save more. You get those discounts when you buy in bulk, right? Like you said, that's huge, man. I really love that. Brian, I really love what you're doing. I love the communities that you're helping. You're actually, not only are you creating affordable living and affordable housing for people, but you are creating opportunities for people in these neighborhoods to have a better, safer place to live. So that's amazing. Okay, I want to transition this into something that we call the final round. I'm going to ask you four questions, and they're hard-hitting questions, but it gives us and the listeners a better understanding of who you are as a person and how you attack the problems that you face. So if you're ready to go, we'll get this party started.
Let's do it.
All right, let's go. So the first question is, what's the biggest mistake you've ever made?
When it comes to real estate, the biggest mistake I'd say I ever made was really, it was really that contractor experience. It was really not wanting to get close to it, being too white collar, coming from a white collar background, not understanding this blue collar game and trying to treat real estate like a white collar business. I got news for you guys. There ain't no HR department you can call and none of that stuff's happening. So you need to familiarize yourself with the blue collar mindset. Another reason why I keep that hard hat there, because it just is a reminder that when you're playing in this game, you got to put your hard hat on. You have to put your boots on the ground and get out and get in these properties and get into the mindset of a contractor in order to be successful. It's just a different world. There's a different jargon, but anybody can do it. You don't need a degree to do it. You don't need a ton of cash to do it. You just need a ton of knowledge and experience. And the best way to get that is to just get out there and make it happen.
Yeah, Brian, love that. Mindset is huge. We didn't even really touch on that too much, but I know your mindset, man, you're where you need to be. That's 100% fact.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the next question I want to ask you is, what is something that you've learned that you wish you knew when you first got started?
I wish I knew that there's not a real way to cut corners, right? So when I first started, one iteration we didn't talk about is what I'll call is like the lipstick iteration, where it's like, you're just going to go and just, we're going to touch up this property. We're going to try to save everything. What can we save? Let's not get rid of anything that we don't have to. And it's completely the wrong mindset. I would call even 99% of the time is you go in with the mindset of, I'm going to save everything, which means the deal is only going to make sense if you can save everything. And then you find out you can't save everything. You can't save as much as you thought you could. And when you start changing things, you end up having to change more and you blow right through your budget almost every time. If you do cut those corners, by the time you put a tenant, everything breaks and you don't get any cash flow because you're constantly having to fix things. It becomes a management nightmare. Just knowing that full gut is the way, because most of these major cities were built in the 1910s, 1915s. The properties are 100 years old. They need rehab desperately. They need people with that knowledge and that expertise. So go and do a gut or a gut-like rehab and then have a property that you can set and forget. It's just the best way to go.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because homes that old, your wiring needs to be replaced, the plumbing, everything because that's very fair point. All right, awesome. All right. The next question I have ties into that as well. And that is, do you have any tips or tricks that you would recommend to someone that is just getting started?
I still love the house hack. I still think nothing beats a good old house hack. My best tip for using like a FHA to get your first deal, use your FHA, if you haven't already, to get the biggest multifamily property that you can afford that will cash flow you. And then negotiate a seller's assist as part of your initial offer. You want to negotiate a seller's assist. The seller's assist can be up to 6%, but on an FHA is usually capped around 3%. But you, so for a $100,000 property, the seller can credit $3,000, 3% of that to your closing costs. It allows you to bring less to the table and therefore get more, get a bigger property with less capital. So that's the tip and trick. But that's my advice. Do the house hack. Go get a multi, use your FHA and get started that way. Learn how to monetize. Learn how to be a landlord. So many people focus on building HGTV, Property Brothers, flip this house. Learn how to be a landlord. If you don't like being a landlord, there's no reason to get in the game. So don't go for the building first. Learn how to be a landlord and monetize. And then if you love it, then keep going.
Yeah, Brian, that is a fair point. And you know what? I wrote that down before too. And I was just looking at that with what you were saying about the whole house hacking experience itself in general. And when you got that first, when you did your first house hack, that seller credit that you negotiated, I wanted to ask you this. So this is, I'm going to go off beat here for a second. But with that being your first deal, how did you know to ask for that?
Being a student of the game, I definitely had buddies who were in the game and we're constantly talking, but just being a research nut and something came across my desk and seller's assist, what is that? How can I use that? And then asking the realtor, what is a seller's assist? How can I use it? How much can I do? Can I ask for 10%? Can I get a house for free? Where's the limit to this thing? And just exploring. So I just stumbled upon it in conversation and putting out offers and learning and putting out an offer and then trying to add a seller assist and then having my realtor say, no, you can't do that. You already offered. You can't add it after the fact. So you just learn the process through, like I said, trial and error. Get out there, take the next logical step, bump your head against the wall. You will figure this thing out. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to do real estate. And that's why we all love it. Those of us who are in it.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Back on track to the final round here. I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. No, it's perfect.
All right. Brian, do you have a favorite business, investing, or real estate related book or podcast or both?
I have my favorite book for people who are wanting to learn how to break free from the 9-to-5 and just think differently about money is The Richest Man in Babylon. And I'm an audiobook guy. So I'll listen to a lot of audiobooks. You can YouTube The Richest Man in Babylon, and there's an audiobook on YouTube that you can just tap in and listen to. Listen on 2x the speed. You'll blast through it in 3 or 4 hours. But the principles in that book are phenomenal. And if you listen to it deeply and a few times, you'll definitely start creating a money plan to save, to put your money to work for you instead of constantly working for your money.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that book. It's one of my favorites. I probably like that one even more than Rich Dad, Poor Dad, 100%. Yeah. The book is just so foundational.
Crazy.
And my kids will read it when they are old enough to understand the these and the thous.
Yeah.
And not get confused when they're reading it. But yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Yeah. Hey, so that's it for the final round, Brian. But I do have one more question for you. And this is the most important question of all, because the people that have been listening to this episode are like, man, Brian is out there killing the game, crushing it. Love what he's doing. I want to learn more about him and what he has to offer here. If you could, Brian, share where people could find more information about you. Do you have a website you could share with us? Any social media, anything like that? We'd love to know.
Yeah, so I'm pretty easy to get a hold of on social media. If you're an Instagrammer, you can find me BrianGrimes_247CFU for the Cashflow University. You can find me on LinkedIn, Brian Grimes Real Estate. You can find me on Facebook, Brian Grimes. You can find me on YouTube, Brian Loves Cashflow. And that's easy to remember because I love cashflow. If you want to tap into my free training, I put together a free real estate training for you guys that'll show you how to acquire properties for pennies on a dollar all across the country. You can tap into that at www.workwithgrind.com/cashflow. And if you find me through any of the social media platforms, TikTok is Brian Grimes as well, you can backlink to that free training as well. Hop on a phone call with me one-on-one. We'll talk about how you can get started in real estate. You can tap into my VIP mentorship program as well. So that's all available for you guys. We also have a program where we're building properties for some of our students in Philadelphia. So we're building properties, deep burr strategy, full gut renovations on big multifamily properties for our students. And we have some people even from outside of the country, from your neck of the woods, Mike, from Hawaii all the way through Canada. all the way from down south and all along the East Coast. We're building properties for people. You definitely tap into that if you're looking to get some good cash flow built, but you're still at the 9 to 5. You don't have time to really tap in and do this thing like I do it.
Yeah, Brian, absolutely love that. So everybody that's listening, that's where you could find Brian Grimes. Go check him out on social media. Go check out his website. Go check out his course. And we'll make sure we make it easy for you. All those links will be in the show notes. And all you got to do is copy and paste or click away, but don't do it if you're driving. But hey, Brian, this has been an absolute treat, man. I feel like this was a great interview. I had a great time talking with you, just hearing your story, seeing what you're doing. You're killing it, man. You're absolutely killing it. So thanks again for joining us on the show.
No, thanks for having me. I really, like I said before, I really appreciate it. And it's a pleasure. Pleasure was all mine.
All right, brother. Aloha from Hawaii. Thank you for making it to the end of this episode. Greatly appreciate you being here with me today on the Average Joe Finances podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make this the episode that you go leave us a 5-star rating or subscribe to our YouTube channel. The Average Joe Finances podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Have an outstanding day.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.